Thank you, GM. Oh, I'm not in this seat.
I'd like to call the Monday, March 1st Finance Committee meeting to order. The first item is the approval of the minutes from the February 1st meeting.
Motion to approve.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, is there anyone here that would like to speak from the public on anything dealing with finance or really anything at all? Seeing none. The next item is the review and possible action with regard to Trident Technical College Mount Pleasant campus lease.
Yes, sir. The town's current five-year lease with Trident Technical College expires in May. Trident Technical College has requested to renew their lease agreement for another 5 years. The one before you has been reviewed by both staff here and their staff, and we all are in agreement.
Okay.
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on this item? Doesn't sound like it.
If our finance director is happy with it, I'm good with it.
I'm kind of with you, Mr. Santos. I'm kind of with you. Yes, sir.
I did have, I mean, is it standard? I mean, basically, it's a lease, a free lease. It's $10 a year. Is that standard? I mean, that, I guess that was an effort to bring the Trident campus to Mount Pleasant. That was my only question, is that, you know.
Yeah, it's the payback is that we have a college campus here in the community.
So, okay, that's what I figured, but that was.
The other payback is there's an awful lot of Mount Pleasant residents that aren't driving.
That aren't driving.
To Rivers Avenue at during some pretty crazy times of day.
Right.
Yeah. So.
That was one.
Cool.
Yes. That was one.
Drive up there too, man.
Yes. Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Any opposed? I did not hear any. All right. Thank you very much. Next, the next item is a discussion and possible action on an easement requested by Mount Pleasant Water Works involving property owned by the town of Mount Pleasant located on 6 Mile Road, Fire Station Number 4.
Mr. Work, so Mr. Duffy presented to the Water Supply Committee just prior to this, as well as myself and Mayor Haney have been involved in these discussions for the past couple of months at the commission meeting. So if it's okay with this committee, I'd like to just go ahead and make a motion to approve instead of having him redo it. Oh, sorry.
Point of order. I believe we skipped five, number five. Don't we have to go in order?
Yes, we do.
Number five?
Yeah.
Mine says number.
Good job, Kathy. Okay, so that's only my first mistake, and I've got like another 45 minutes, so we can take bets on how many more I'll have. But Jake, I'm sorry, but and I think you were talking about the bond refinancing for the Mount Pleasant Water Works, item five. That is what we're going to be discussing right now. And again,
oh, yeah, that's what I was referring to.
I know, that's my fault.
I'm sorry.
Totally my fault, 100%.
That's all sorts of you.
But we are on the action item for the bond refinancing for Mount Pleasant Water Works, and I was here. It was voted on unanimously to send to the full council for this.
Yeah, and long story short, this saves the ratepayers money, refinancing at a great time, and I just didn't think he needed to redo the whole presentation, if that is okay with the committee.
Okay, we do need a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve.
All right, we have a motion.
Second.
And a second. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, now, I'm sorry, but this is a discussion of the action on the easement of the Mount Pleasant Water Works involving property owned by the town of Mount Pleasant located on 6 Mile Road, Fire Station 4.
Yes, sir. On the screen is the location of the proposed easement for Mount Pleasant Water Works for the town's Fire Station 4. We're looking for a recommendation for this easement to send to town council.
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? This is not the first time we've seen this, or but I do appreciate all the work in getting us to this point. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Okay. Any opposed? Hearing none. All right. Next item, discussion of possible action with regard to adding an additional stormwater crew to the annual operating budget. If I can, This also is not the first time that we've discussed this, and it was brought back to this committee for the sole purpose of the financing part of this. That's what this committee is. So, Ms. Kartov, if you can explain to us the financial implications of adding this crew and two technicians to the budget at mid-year.
Yes, sir. So what you're seeing is the compensation and equipment cost for a three-man crew. The choices, if you decide to do it at mid-year, would be we could include it for the second reading. That will go for town council with the determination of the funding source, whether it's general fund or stormwater funding. We would recommend stormwater funding. If you choose, the other option would be with our annual budget, which will be presented at the end of March.
I'm sorry. So you're saying we do it now with stormwater fees or do it at the end of the year as a part of the budget?
You could do it either. So once a year, you have the opportunity with the adoption of the annual budget. Again, it's presented at the end of March for July 1st implementation, or the mid-year. It just happens that the timing is that the second reading of the mid-year amendments will be presented to town council next week.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, I think we would prefer that if this is approved, that that funding come from the stormwater fund. Not the operating.
I can't hear anything you're saying, Mr. Demore.
We would prefer that if this is, if the direction is to move forward, that the funding come from stormwater.
Okay.
It operates, it's not a utility, but it operates similar to that rather than the operating fund.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
I would like to make motion that we add three stormwater crew, as per staff's recommendation here, it's three infrastructure crew leaders and an infrastructure crew leader and two technicians for stormwater plus the equipment needed at this time to the stormwater fee budget.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion about this? Mr. Rambo.
So if it's coming out of the stormwater budget, how does that affect what the money's currently being spent on, or
that budget is solvent until 2025. A big portion of that budget is regular ongoing annual maintenance. So what will happen is if that goes into that budget today, it would accelerate the lack of solvency within that particular budget. So
essentially approving this means in a couple of years from now, that budget line item is in the negative, and it forces a fee increase. Is that what you're saying?
At current expenditures, the answer is yes. However, one of the major expenditures in there is your ongoing maintenance for stormwater repair. So at that point, we'd have options of whether to continue to use that fund for that type of repair, or utilize other special funds that we have, or tap into operating. So there's options. However, while it's solvent, we should go ahead and if it's decided upon that we're gonna go ahead with this crew, we should take it out of the most appropriate place.
Okay, another question is, has it been researched as far as, is it cheaper for us to hire a crew and pay for equipment to do this, or is there specific work that needs to be done that would be cheaper from a utility contractor or a third party contractor to do this work as needed? I guess is my question. Is there work that they need to be doing 40 hours a week all year long?
Well, we can always use the help, and I'm confident that our public services director would make that same comment. For years, we had contract labor, but we moved away from that quite recently because the ability to get contract labor has been very difficult. In addition to that, the price has gone up considerably. So it really isn't much of an option for us anymore. So if the desire is to go ahead and add this additional crew, then the best way forward for us is to just go ahead and hire them and make them town employees.
Good questions, Mr. Rambo. I will add one thing if I can. Oh, Kathy, go ahead.
You can.
As you will all recall, last week, we received a correspondence from a resident in the Old Village, not unlike emails that we have gotten periodically about issues. And I don't know if I can rank these, but I think drainage and flooding is one of the worst problems we have in this entire town, period. And what the author of the email wrote was that a lot of this, in their opinion, was just cleaning out of the ditches that were in front of their property anyway. So as Mr. Chapman brought to us a while back, it's sort of a, it is an ongoing maintenance of making sure that the ditches are able to do what the ditches do, I think. So I think we're addressing this right at the right time, my opinion, and I think it could be pretty good for us. Yes, Kathy.
And just to add to that, we did have a hiring freeze during the virus and the COVID crisis this past year. So, and we know that we're moving forward with some pretty major stormwater work. So I think this is a great time to do this.
Okay, any more discussion? Yes, sir.
One follow-up. So my understanding, I know Mr. Chapman, Councilmember Member Chapman spoke a lot about this at a meeting, but it was quite a while ago as far as what exactly this crew would be doing as far as cleaning out the ditches and stuff. So take, for instance, Mathis Ferry Road. I know those ditches get, they're obstructed a lot. So this crew, and I think, would be working on that sort of thing, is keeping those ditches clear. Is that correct? Or
very good question. I understand your point. That example just happens to be South Carolina DOT roadway. But yes, if for our roads, they would be deployed to clean out those systems and keep them operating. I would have to defer to Mr. Peel as to whether there would be increased opportunities in the future to whether our crews, only if necessary, could go ahead onto property infrastructure owned by another entity and do some work if we had to for the benefit of our citizens.
Okay, yeah, I guess that was my question, is, and that's why I used that example, because I know that is SCDOT, but I know it's not maintained like it probably should be, and it affects a large portion of residents there. So anyway, I'm just was curious how that relationship worked.
I think what this crew will do will give us a greater ability to do that if we can. The delicate walk in this example is that, you know, the moment we start doing work on others' property is the moment it's tougher to get them back to do it on their own. And that's been our experience time after time. However, if it is somebody else's infrastructure and it is a problem, and either their, heaven forbid, their personal safety or their property is in danger, then we'd have extra resources and manpower to be able to help.
Okay.
All right, thank you. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
I'm just abstaining because I want to get some more information about what they exactly they're going to do.
Okay, but the motion does pass and it will go to the council for mid-year budget. The next item, consideration and possible action with regard to amending the expiration date associated with Chapter 110 Business License Code.
Yes, sir. The state has adopted the South Carolina Business License Tax Reform Act effective January 2022. One section is already in play, and that is the third party and the data we share and the confidentiality of it. The rest comes into play, and the major changes in January, and the major changes are that it standardizes the business license period dates, that we will every 2 years have to conform with Nexus and IRS updates, a schedule that comes out of the state. There's a standardized appeal process. The state will be having a business license portal. It doesn't negate the need for the town also to accept business license payments. And that during the transition year, in the aggregate in certain categories, they get very specific, we have to be revenue neutral during that transition. So with all the major changes, the town will need to repeal and replace our existing ordinance, and that is required to be done by December 31st, 2021. The standardization of the license dates means that the town will be renewing its upcoming business licenses in July. However, they will need to conform with the state, so they will need to expire April 30th, 2022, so that we'll be in compliance. So the businesses will still, as you see here, they will still pay once a calendar year. However, the licenses issued in July will need to expire April, and our ordinance shows a June 30th expiration. So we do need to amend our current ordinance for now, because it will take a while to get through the different pieces. So the next steps kind of talk about why it takes so long. So we did receive the standardized schedule from the state. We need to wait till we have all of our June 30th data in so that we can do those calculations required for the transition to meet those pieces. There are other components of our ordinance that we'll want to look at and see if it's allowed to be in our new ordinance. And so we'll be bringing back to the Finance Committee different decision matrices so that you can look at them and decide what pieces you do want in and not. But we really need our June 30th data before we can get to the bulk of the portion of it. So the first piece is take our existing ordinance, change the expiration date till April, so when the renewals go out in June, it will show that, let our businesses know that it'll be expiring in April. And then during this transition, the next 6 months, 7 months, we'll be working on what our new ordinance looks like to be adopted by December. So January 1st, we're in compliance with state code.
So Ms. Kartoff, if I could just really, really oversimplify this, it's not our choice. So we can say that we're going to discuss. The state is doing this. The issue is that businesses in the town are going to get their tax bill 2 months prior to when they got it in the past. And so it's an education process to let them know we don't want to do this. We have to do this. And, you know, we will be collecting these now in April as opposed to when we normally did it. And it's more of an information thing for the public, I think. Get it on the record, discuss it, make sure all of us that are going to get the phone calls understand it. But this is, this to me, when it was explained, is like, we don't really have a choice.
That is correct. Yes, sir.
Okay. So, based on that, Mr. DeMora, do we have a motion and a second? What do we do here? Ms. Landy.
I make a motion that we adjust the anniversary for business license fees as per the state's new requirement, and so that our ordinance is in compliance.
Okay.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on this? Okay, will this come to full council, Mr. DeMora?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Can I make one comment?
Yes, Ms. Layden.
I've already brought this up to several business owners because, you know, it will clearly be out there that this is a 10-month expiration instead of a year. But unless what I've gotten feedback is so. Okay, so for some people, maybe they don't want to have to pay the bill 2 months earlier, but unless their fiscal year is exactly the same as ours, and therefore this means they're paying twice in their own fiscal same year, which is not the case for a lot. A lot of businesses are calendar, or they use September 30th, like the government. Anyway, so it's going to not be a huge issue for a lot of folks, but I wonder if we might want to figure out a way to and I don't want to overcomplicate here, but figure out a way that if it is problematic, for instance, someone that does have a fiscal year where this hits them as two times paying in 1 year, can we look at exceptions where they get to pay on July 1st that one time? I don't know if that's...
That would mean then that we would be fronting them the money from our funds, I think.
Well, no, I mean, this is incoming revenue. It's incoming.
Yeah,
revenue. Maybe we shouldn't get that complicated. I'm just suggesting that if
I
for
think
some
we
chance...
Should wait. In my opinion, I think we should wait for the problem before we solve the problem.
Right, true.
Right now. The agenda item and what we're forced to right now is what your motion was. And I think that if we can continue with that, I mean, we're a good committee. We're flexible. We can work this out when the problem hits us, but let's not solve one that isn't here yet, in my opinion. All right. Anything, Mr. Rambo?
No, thanks.
No?
I'm good.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Good motion. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Now we have a discussion of a tiered rate stormwater fee.
Good morning.
Kevin.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. We have a brief 15-minute presentation here. I'll try to be as quickly as possible going through this, but it's very important information here. We have a lot of ground to cover. This is a continuation of the discussion from our council retreat in regards to creating and developing a tiered stormwater rate program for single-family residents. That's the first order of business, and then the second topic we really need to cover is really the more pressing one, and that is the potential rate adjustment. So we have really two things to discuss here this evening. With us, we have our consultant, Ms. Tara Hollis, with Wilden. She's joining us virtually. Also, Mr. Brad Morrison has been involved with this as well, and he's welcome to jump in at any time throughout the presentation. So, opening up with a little bit of order of magnitude here, just so you get a good understanding of the magnitude of the program, the scale. We currently have over 25,000 single-family residential units in the town. Combining that with townhouses and condominiums comes up to over 32,000 folks receive an annual bill from the Charleston County tax bill every year for our stormwater utility fee. So as you can see, anything that we do administratively, it's very sensitive to the workload that we have to do and we have to produce internally. Now, looking at a tiered program, we have to begin with what kind of information and data is available. It's very important to make sure this is good data. It's townwide, so it brings us to the tax assessor's office, and they have a whole range of information available. We selected what would be applicable in the stormwater utility program, and we narrowed it down to the assessed value, the potential for a parcel size distribution. We also heard from our last meeting about the impervious surface, multi-level, discounting for multi-level parcel, multi-levels on parcels, and also the total building square footage. So those were the four kind of chosen. We backed into the different methodology of potentially creating this tiered program. So taking the first one, looking at the tax assessed value, we quickly came to the realization that this would probably be the most inequitable situation where you do have differences in land value based upon where the land is located. Also, the home of the age too has a factor in the tax assessed assessment for the property. The example we show you is a similar lot size, a similar lot house, a similar sized house, and the assessed value is twice as much. So we easily came to the conclusion that this might not be the best methodology to use for a tiered system. Also, the tax assessed value doesn't really correlate very well with runoff. The next clicker's not working. Oh, there we go. The next methodology we considered and we heard from our last meeting was to consider the parcel size. By no surprise, most of all of Mount Pleasant, the parcel size is less than a half an acre. So the distribution, what we were looking for, that would create a nice tiered system is really, the scatter is really tight. and it also does not account for the impervious surface. So therefore, this particular approach wouldn't be the most ideal situation for a tiered system, because there could be some inconsistencies with bigger houses on smaller lots like an Ion, or larger houses on, or smaller houses on bigger lots like you'd find in the upper part of Mount Pleasant. So we didn't really feel like this was going to be our front runner to go about the program. Another methodology we looked at this one very closely, is the impervious surface. This really does have the more correlation with the runoff for each particular lot. And what we came across when we were looking at this is the information we received from the tax assessor's office and the information we had in our GIS did not quite overlap perfectly. There is a little bit of a mapping discrepancy. So when you're looking at something town-wide, you're looking at potentially a number of units that, as the example up here we show you, has an illustration of the parcel line actually going through the top of a house. So if we did a population of town-wide, and we could have one lot that actually has twice the impervious surface, and then the other lot may not have any impervious surface. This would be a tremendous administrative thing to correct. And this is just an example, because we have very, very dense subdivisions in the town. So we're looking at thousands of discrepancies that would need to be manually created up, corrected up front. We also have, on an average, about 5 new single-family residential permits a day that come in. That's pools, accessory buildings, additions to homes. So every day we would have to continuously update the database to make sure that everybody was treated fairly and equitable. So we really felt like this was kind of the tipping point on the administration piece of, we really can't do the all-in because of what we would be doing. We would be depleting our internal resources just to keep the program running. So the next thing we looked at is the total building square foot. This we broke this into 200 square foot increments. As you can see, this has a very nice distribution curve, makes it very easy to separate it into tiers. There is a high consistency among neighbors. The information is readily available, it's reasonable, and the public would be, it'd be easily understood by the public. If you explain to all the neighbors along the same street that their house is generally the same, they're more than likely going to fit into the same tiered program. So it would be very easy to explain to our citizens. The only drawback to this particular approach is there, what we talked about last month, is it doesn't really discredit or account for the multi-levels of each building. You could have 2, 3, 4 story impervious buildings, but it does take into account the overall mass of the structure. So we really like this option, this methodology. So we looked a little bit closer at what relationships that could be there between the total impervious surface for the lot, including the building foot pad, and then the actual size of the building. We grabbed about 25 random areas within the town, just as an example. And what we came up with, we did the hand calculation on the lot, determined the total impervious surface, and then we also knew half the 25 was one story, the other half was two story, and we graphed them out to see if there was a relationship, and it was very interesting what happened. The blue line shows the total building square foot area, and then the top line shows the total impervious surface for the parcel. So halfway down the chart, it goes from one story to two story, and you see kind of a natural increase in total square foot area of the building, but you also see an increase in the total impervious surface for the lot. Now, this is a very small sample. I wouldn't think this was statistically significant, but if this is the approach that we would be looking more into, then we would obviously expand on that range and take maybe 100 or 200, whatever statistically is significant, to make sure that there is a relationship between total impervious surface and in bigger homes. So we just had this as a real brief example for y'all to consider. So wrapping this up, we created this graphical representation. This is not scientific or scaled or anything, but it does show the relationship between the four methodologies. The correlation being as the administration increased, you really have an increase in accuracy. That would be the best outcome you could have the more you put into the program. The impervious surface and footprint would be the highest. They would be the highest administration, but it would be the highest accuracy. But because of the administration, level of administration, you would actually go beyond a feasibility tipping point where it really wouldn't benefit the town to have this type of labor-intensive program. The other three methods we looked at, the easiest to administer would be the tax assessed value, but yet it would be the least accurate. A step up would be the parcel size. That would be a little bit more accurate and still administratively feasible. And then the total building square foot area is really the front runner in what we're looking at, because it's still feasible, because it's administratively easy to administer, apply, and it is a little bit more accurate than the parcel size and the tax assessed value. So we really looked at the information that we had, and just kind of gives you an idea of whatever we end up with really isn't going to be perfect system, and it's not going to be completely fair to everybody, but I think the best option we have is going with the total building square foot area. So I want to pause right here to make sure that y'all understand and have any questions, and then I can get into the second part of the presentation.
Wow.
Is that?
That looked... That's
okay.
That's this is a great, great, great presentation. I appreciate all the work that you all did for this. And it's not easy. Making a decision is not easy. What I like is that fairness line, because at the end of the day, that's what we're looking for, is fair, in my opinion. The other thing that's important for staff is you're going to have to explain this. You know, you're going to have to take the call and then explain it. And I think you've given a lot of great examples to make the explanation part of this a little bit easier. So I just appreciate what you're doing, and I think it's a great presentation. Anything? Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Second part of this.
Yes.
Is really the more pressing issue, and I think y'all spoke a little bit about this earlier, is the financial condition of the program itself. We have to meet certain milestones or targets to be in compliance with state regulations. We have to maintain 115% debt to revenue ratio. We consider the continuously increasing cost of staff. We also have a budget-based analysis of $1.5 million per year. That is the bare minimum that we would need every year to address the immediate concerns of pipe repair and rehabbing the systems. So, and also we have to maintain a 90-day operating expenses fund balance. Not take on any more debt in the future. This would be the bare minimum that the program would have to incur. And then this is the chart produced by Ms. Hollis. This shows if we maintain $60 per year by the end of 2023, the program would become insolvent. And as it continues, then it would start compounding all the way into 2031. So I wanted to make sure that y'all understood where we were heading, just meeting the status quo, the bare minimum, maintaining what we're doing right now. By the end of 2023 and the end of 2024, we will not have a solvent program. So what to do about that? There's a couple of different options. We have a just-in-time option where we wait until the very end in 2024. We increase it almost 20%. Or we have a phased-in approach where it's small increments consistently throughout the life of throughout the next 10 years, where at the end of the next 10 years, everybody would be paying $88. So those are your two options. And of course, there would be a work workstation, I mean, a workshop that we can do to start tweaking the numbers and doing some things and meet and discuss what really is more palatable and what y'all would like to see. We also have a needs-based financial analysis to meet the kind of the pie in the sky, the maximum what we would need. And this is derived from our 2012 study from Stantec for meeting the needs of our stormwater needs annually. We would need 102% increase in 2022. And then from there, 47% increase, and then it would stabilize to $178 for the next 10 years. So that is the maximum, the needs based upon the study that was conducted in 2012 by Stantec. What are the next steps? Well, we could explore the three-tiered system a little bit further. We could also explore the four-tiered system. The chart on the right is an example of potentially what could happen. We could have one tier being 0.75 ERU. The bulk of Mount Pleasant could remain as one, and then the higher square foot area buildings could be at 1.75 to reach a net neutral outcome. And then the second thing is, what do we do about the base rate adjustment implementation? Do we proceed with it just in time, where we wait until the program becomes insolvent in 2024, or we do a phased in approach where we do incrementally every year consistently? And of course, as mentioned before, we do offer a study for a workshop to present those type of scenarios in the future. So that concludes my presentation. If there's anything Ms. Hollis or Brad would like to add,
I just want to say a few quick things, and I think Kevin has done an excellent job. He thought up most of this presentation in an effort to try to simplify a pretty complicated issue.
He knew who he was talking to, didn't he?
No. He and I like to do that anyway, because he's got to do that with me. A few points. Really, we're asking for a decision on the methodology. I think we've shown that there is a correlation between, you know, on the issue of stories and such, that there is a correlation between the square footage and an increase in square footage. You also have an increase in pervious area. So that's still fair and equitable. So hopefully, if everybody agrees with that, we're going to proceed forward. Eric mentioned insolvency, 2023-2025. I want to just highlight that the 2023 is something the consultant assumed that all the money we spend on stormwater comes out of the stormwater fund. That's the way. So we'd hit it quicker. At the current rate of 900,000 coming out, 600 of general fund, it's 2025.
You're doing that now?
Currently, of the 1.5 annual amount, 900,000 is coming out of the stormwater and 600,000 is coming out of other funding. In this case, it's through the fund balance policy, the infrastructure money is what's paying for 600,000.
Is it a line item transfer from fund balance?
It's part of mid-year when we do the true up. Part of the funding from the fund balance policy goes over to infrastructure, transportation, and stormwater. It helps fund it. Yes.
Does any come from the debt service fund to it, or do you take it from operating?
It comes from our operating fund balance.
Have you ever used debt service funding to pay for stormwater?
We will.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea.
When we build Royal Avenue, the drainage, because that's a general obligation, but it's a stormwater project.
Yeah, I'm one person, and if I were you, I would do the exact presentation we have here. Look at what this is. But, you know, I know we're in separate pots, but I look at debt as debt. And how we pay for it. We cannot prioritize something from regular town debt service to go to stormwater if we choose. And so I think having that flexibility is good. We have to take action. I get that. But I'm not crazy worried about it right this second. We've got to do something. But it's like every year we wake up, the budgetary problems are going to be there. They're going to be there. I don't care what it is. It's never going to be, we have so much money that we just don't know what to do with it. So there's going to be these hard decisions now and in the future before 2031 to make these decisions on what we're funding and what we're not funding, especially for debt and the big bonding thing. So, and we've been lucky. Our interest rates, we've been really good with that. So anything, Kathy.
Okay, several things. So one is, just to clarify, aren't we paying out of the stormwater fee? Isn't that how we did things like the paying the SRA that we used to do SNE Farm?
Is yes, ma'am.
Okay. And then when is that paid off? Because I know we're already paying principal as well as interest.
Once the project completed, we began our debt payments.
Right.
So we actually are 20 years out. We just started last July was our first payment.
Mm-hmm.
We're 20 years out.
And didn't we also, there is still capability to have more SRA funding if we need it. I don't think we've used that yet, right? Isn't
there? We can apply again. We have to meet the criteria. Our SRF funding
Sorry,
loan, no, you're fine, ma'am, was 1.4. We actually, with our $10 million we just went out in GO bond, we were able to get 1.26. So with the regulations on the SRF, I would probably go GO again if we wanted to do something more. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. So here's a couple things. Is just one is that I think the just in time as opposed to the phasing in is a better methodology, at least based on what we have to go on now, because we've just heard several things that change the time frame even from this analysis. For instance, what Brad shared with us about the money being transferred from operating. We also did have the decision that was made that ended up where we lowered the millage, but not quite all the way back to revenue neutral, and it ended up that we have debt service going on, and obviously we're starting some major projects because of it, thank goodness, in Royal Basin. You know, I don't know if everybody else has more to say, but I'd like to make a motion. Maybe we can discuss it after that. Do we need a motion? We do, right?
A motion.
I don't think so right now, from what I understand. I think we just saw this for the first time. And do we recommend something now?
I think the conversation at the retreat was about, it all stemmed from the fact that we know we have a storm looming on the stormwater side. All right.
Yeah.
So I would agree with you. It's not a today or necessarily tomorrow type issue. Storm is looming, but there wasn't a desire to continue that single rate over the course of time. So we got into other ways to structure this, which is what has got us here today.
Yeah.
All we're looking for today is to say that, hey, this tiered structure can fill in the blank tomorrow with rates and amounts and what to charge and all that. But this tiered structure based on building square footage, because we showed a correlation between that and actual
impervious. That's what my motion would have been.
Yeah.
That's what my motion would have been.
It's for us just to kind of, we don't even
need a motion
okay, for that.
Great.
But thank you. Is to just keep perfecting what that might look like for a decision down the road at some point.
Yeah, but it's important to have on the record that we think this is a great idea. And I go back to fair. What you tackled was fair. And fair is what all the citizens want. And I think you've put in a lot of work to get us to something like that. It's fair and explainable. So although we do not have to take action, I think it's a great first step. I think you have support from this committee for that further discussion. And I just appreciate what you've all done for it.
And if we could sum up one thing about fair, because a lot of times people don't like that word very much. This one of the first things we talked about as to why this was a good idea as opposed to $60 flat was, or some higher number flat, was because we do have a lot of teardowns in places like the Village where you go from 1,400 and suddenly you have 4,000. And someone would know, hey, if you make that decision, if you've got your permits, you're allowed to do that, you're going to pay a higher stormwater fee. It's a very easy thing to explain.
Ms. Rambo.
I just think we need to be careful with the word fair because
right. That's why I said that.
I mean, it's
my favorite
I don't,
word.
I wouldn't be using a senior center, but yet my taxes go to support a senior center. Some people may not have children, but their taxes go to support the recreation center. It's just kind of, I don't know, I almost seem like we're too far. down the road a little bit. I mean, I get it, but a large portion of the stormwater fees, correct me if I'm wrong, goes to maintain the stormwater that's coming off of our roads and that sort of thing that everybody's using and everybody's driving on. And so anyway, I do support the moving to square footage, so I think that makes sense. But I don't think any taxes are ever going to be perfectly fair based on everyone has different needs and uses. But
yeah. One day you're going to want to go to that senior center and you're going to be happy that that we did it this way. But now you're...
I was not criticizing the senior. I very young, support the senior center.
Yes.
Just saying.
Everyone pays taxes
for stuff
I'm
they don't
on
use.
You. I get it. Well, thank you, everybody. That was a really good discussion, and I think we can...
Well...
Do you need anything else for us on that issue?
I don't need anything else, but I have one more comment that I
yeah,
think
sure.
is pertinent, and that is that I think part of my job is to try to give options and choices. Just remember that $1.5 million a year goes into maintenance and repair. That is only coming from the fact that we're turning back money to the general fund. If that day does not occur, and one day it probably won't, as expenses continue to rise, then money going into maintenance and repair will drastically be reduced. You could also never adjust the stormwater fee, but that money would have to come from somewhere, and it would come from maintenance and repair over the long term. So really, this isn't, while it is a discussion about how things should be tiered and what the rate should be, it's really a discussion about what the level of service council believes we should be given to our stormwater utility system infrastructure.
Commissioner,
good point.
One quick one.
Yes, Jake.
So let's say we went forward eventually with changing to this square footage based model. What would be the goal as far as would it go into effect for, I mean, do we have a goal of for it going into effect on the 2021 tax bill, or what are we actually looking to do there?
I think the first objective is that from what I glean from conversations amongst council is to have a better, a more fair way of assessing a fee for stormwater. And so perhaps the first thing would be just to put in place a better system. And then the second thing would be, is there an appetite? Does council want to move forward and increase that in some way to generate more revenue that could go towards maintenance and repair?
Well, I'm saying even just to change the structure, like to remain revenue neutral, but switch to the square footage idea.
Yeah.
That's what we are thinking about that for the 2021 tax bill then.
That's where we're headed.
Okay.
Assuming that you're comfortable with what we've presented.
Okay.
How we're going to go about it.
Okay.
Yes, Gary.
Yeah, I was just wondering, can I get a copy of this?
Yes,
so,
sir.
So I can sit down and we can have some private conversations, just so I can ask some questions.
Yeah.
I don't want to take up any
good
more
stuff.
Time.
Sure. Okay, is there anything else? Okay, the next item is to adjourn. Thank you very much. Got a lot accomplished.
Mr. Rambo, you're a funny guy.